Barbara Stimler, Reel 2.
I want you to tell us now about your move into the Lodge Ghetto.
Yes. After they took all the men away and sent them away to Fort Rajivu for work, 3 months later, all the women had to assemble in the marketplace, and they put us in trains, and they sent us to Lodge Ghetto. Now, when I got to Lodge Ghetto, my mother was absolutely broken-hearted when they took my father away. So I had to be a husband, a daughter, and a mother. She was absolutely helpless. When we got to the ghetto, on the platform, there were two women there with white overcoats, and somebody told me they're looking for people working in children's hospital. So I went over to them and asked them if they could employ me. That they took my father away already, and I'm with my mother, who's helpless. They didn't want to take me because they said, a child will look after a child. But I begged them on my knees, and they said to me, okay, come tomorrow. Now, when you got to Lodge, there were also committees who were putting us with the families, to live with the families from Lodge. We were put, myself and my mother, with another couple, which was a mother and the son. The son was a little bit older than myself. It was very, very difficult for me because it was one room, and I was afraid to undress myself for the night. Anyway, the next day I went to this hospital where they taught me, a place called Marischiniec. It was a little bit outside Litzmannstadt. There were two barracks facing each other. On one side of the barrack, there were children who suffered with tuberculosis, and on the other side of the road, in the block, children suffering with boils. Of course, they put me into the hospital where they're suffering with boils. I was quite happy there. The children were very good. I used to bath them. Of course, I was not a nurse, so I was washing the floors. I was helping them with all duties. Now, if you didn't work in the ghetto, you didn't get a coupon to get a soup. And my mother didn't get the soup because she was not working. Working in the hospital and explaining them the situation, they used to let me have a soup to take home. On my day off, I found a room for myself and my mother to have our own place. So it was like a little square room, which we had two beds there. And as I told you, the committee helped us with some bedding and two chairs and a little table. And that's where we lived, still working in the hospital there. I found also a job for my mother in a kitchen, which was fantastic because she had soup there and she was quite happy. Unfortunately, that didn't take long. Suddenly she became ill and I was in trouble. They took her to hospital and they sent her back where she was paralyzed on one side. When I went to work, I had to leave two chairs next to her, one with some food, whichever I had, and some with a bedpan. When I come back, I had to clean her and look after her. Sadly, in the morning, I'm getting up to work, and people are telling me they're closing down the street. What am I going to do with my mother? If they found it, they take her away from me. So I carried her in the garden, put her in a ditch, covered her up with some straw and went back to work, praying to God, when I come back, she should be there. She was there. I carried her back, put her on the bed, and it was very, very difficult for me. Thank God I was still working in the hospital, so I was allowed to get out from the place where they were closing the the street because I was wearing a uniform. And, of course, I was getting a soup still from the hospital for her. One day, they closing again the streets. Now, I haven't got the strength anymore to carry my mother, so I left her there. She spoke a very good German. When the assessment came, she said to them, "My daughter went to call an ambulance for me." And they left her there, lucky. The hospital didn't last long. One day, two lorries came and told the children to go into the lorries. Like the children would know where they were going because they were crying. We were wearing long overalls over our uniforms. They were hiding behind the overalls and they didn't want to go. But we were also afraid they shouldn't take us with. Though I didn't know where they were taking the children, but I didn't want to be taken away because left my mother so ill. And that was my whole, the whole terrible thing for me, that I was leaving her. And I have to go back. Anyway, they took the children away. That time they didn't have crematoriums. And what I heard afterwards, they guessed the children in the lorries. I went back. I had to find myself another job. I went to a factory that were knitting tablecloths for German women. The German woman used to come, and they used to choose the patterns, and we used to knit for them beautiful, beautiful tablecloths with very, very thin, silky cotton. And the tablecloths were as big as, I would say, 4 meters by 4 meters after they stretched them. Now, how do I get a soup for my mother? A lot of girls were in the same situation as I was. They had parents ill who didn't get no soup for them. So what we did, the woman whose husbands were working direct for the Germans, because in the middle of the ghetto, you had a house where the Germans were there. It was their offices. And some of those, of course, chosen people who were worked directly with them. It was a president called Rumkowski, and he was direct in contact with the Germans, and they were giving us, because really a ghetto was like one factory. We used to do for them everything. We used to do for them shoes, uniform, hats, everything. And we used to get money who were only allowed to use in the ghetto. Everything was Jewish in the ghetto. The policeman was Jewish. We had cops. Where we had cops was only for a bread. We used to get a bread per a person, one bread a week. And we had also cops, where we used to get from them sometimes potatoes, potato peels. Whatever they could get in the ghetto, we used to get a ration. It was very, very tough. We were very hungry. People were starving on the streets, lying, dying from hunger, children whose parents were already perished, and it was very, very tough. The women whose husbands were working for the Germans direct, they had to figure out that they were working as well, but of course they didn't want to knit. So girls like myself, they used to give it to us to do the work for them, and they gave us the coupon for the soup. And I was also doing it. Sometimes you had to have all night knitting and the next day you have to go to work. And I had the soup for my mother. But we are also working during the working hours in the factory. And one girl was caught. She was caught. And they took the soup away from her. And we knew what the soup means to her. So we start striking. We didn't work. Policemen came and they arrested us. It was 30 of us. They put us in jail. When you were in jail, we are very lucky if the Royal Commando didn't come and took you away wherever they took you away. which I did not know where they were taking them away. But again, I didn't want to be taken away because I've got my ill mother. By the evening, when I'm supposed to go home from work and see to my mother, what am I to do? I'm arrested. We are very lucky that the Royal Commando didn't come and took us away. I asked the officer, the police officer, and I told him the story, and I asked him, could he take me to my mother because she's in that state? Anyway, he came with me. Even he helped me to chop a little bit of wood, which I warmed up, and peeled potatoes. I made like cutlets for her on the steam of the water. I steamed up for her and made her some drink, and he took me back to jail. And I said to her, don't worry, I come back home. I will not come back for the night. I come back in the evening. When I come back, I tell you everything. But don't worry, I will be back. The next day, they put us again in fifths and start marching us. It was a ghetto in the ghetto, but they were in fields. It was like outside the ghetto. Two barracks. In one barrack, we had to assemble some bits and pieces. I don't even know what it was. A friend of mine, who is alive, she was with me in the ghetto, in this factory where we were assembling the things. She said that we were putting together some bombs or something. And then we had to also pack tools were supposed to be sent to warm up the aeroplane engines, because where they sent us to this place, it was winter already. I still think that we are packing the things for warming up the aeroplane's engines. She says to me that it was something else, but I don't know. It was like a chain work. Everybody had to put something else in the box, and the German was standing in the end, and he was checking if everything is there. If it wouldn't be, God help us. Now, here, what do I do with my mother for the soup again? I went to the man who was in charge, the manager of that place, and I told him the situation. And he let me have an extra soup. During the lunch hour, I should take the soup to my mother. As the fields were very frozen, and I was rushing to take the soup for my mother, I gave her the soup. I never fell, but coming back with the frozen earth, I was falling about 3-4 times. It's like God was with me that I have to take this soup for my mother. Anyway, and that's where I was working. On Sundays, they didn't raid. They didn't take people away. So that Sunday I got up and I went to the next house where people were already not there. They were taking away. I took a bit of flour from there and start mixing, making like a little bread, putting into the oven. And two assessments are standing in the door. I had my rucksack always ready. And I thought, oh my God. I just stood in the door and I said, Mama, God should be with us. And they took me away. And that's how I left my mother. And I never saw her and heard from her again.
Barbara, so just tell us a little bit about the sort of description of the Lodge Ghetto and your sense of being cut off and isolated.
Yes. Unfortunately, I mean, I was not born in Lodge. I come from another town, so I did not know anybody. It was very, very difficult for me because I had to do everything for my mother. I had to go standing in the queues for the rations, sometimes till 11 o'clock in the night, and carrying all myself on my shoulders, if it was a ration of wood or potatoes or coal. And it was very difficult for me because I did not have at all help from anybody. If you were born in Lodz, you knew some people, they were still with families, it was much easy. It was not easy, but easier than I had it. I had it really very, very tough. And very difficult with my mother. Because seeing her going to nothing, on one leg she had like little worms walking on it. It was really pitiful. And only what she needed is food. One day they gave us a little ration of oil, a little bottle of oil. I didn't even touch it. Before I went to work, I gave her a teaspoon every morning, this oil, thinking maybe that will help her. Nothing helped. She was just going to nothing. When I see her... If I'm seeing in front of me, it's just,
I think we're
killing me. No, okay. Anyway, when they, is it still on? Is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now
we'll pick up from where you were.
They took me away. Well, they took me away.
Yes. Yeah. We'll take the story from there.
Yes.
And take your time about it. Just
yes. Okay. When they took me away from my mother, there were no platform, just a train there, a truck train where you carry animals. Before we got into the train, they gave us all a loaf of bread, and in the middle of the train was a barrel of water, and of course they put us in and we were like sardines. And I still did not know where they taking us. I just did not know that a place like Auschwitz existed. In the corner was sitting there a couple with the young a baby warming up on a candle. I don't know if it was milk or water. The journey took about, I don't know, 12 hours, I don't know how long, but the stench in this train and people fainting, it was just, you cannot describe unless you live through it. It's indescribable. And myself, because I left my mother in such a state, I was really feeling very, very ill. And two young women were there, and she could see the way I was feeling, the way I was. And somehow they took a bit of sugar, and they were giving into my mouth this bit of sugar to keep me alive. It was, I can't describe to you what a feeling that was. Standing in that train, you couldn't sit, we're standing. It was just terrible. The smell. Eventually, we stopped. It was dark. That's why I thought when we went there to the trains, it was still daylight. It must be about 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock, something like that during the day. But when we got to Auschwitz, it was dark. We had to get off the trains, and they said, leave your luggage, the luggage will come with you. The luggage come with us. Anyway, now they start sorting. The men separate and the women separate. The screams from the mothers who are separated from the children, from the boys, the sons, from the husbands, it was just terrible. And of course they had the beds and they start beating and all this. It was just terrible. We start going through a gate. And then the two girls are still giving me the sugar to keep me alive. I still don't know where I am. One woman goes to the left. The two SS men standing, one to the left, one to the right. I am going with these girls to the right. They put us in fifth. And start counting us. Counting us and counting us.
Were you hearing a noise?
Yes, I am.
It was a police. Yeah, police, yes, yeah.
I'm sorry.
Yes, it's okay. I'll say, of course, the bird can't be helped, yes.
Okay, Barbara, so we'll pick the story up from where they were sorting people to left and to right. Just take it calmly.
And when they said, when we went through the gates, and there was two SS men standing on both sides, and of course plenty of them more, but near the gate, and they looked at a person, one on the right, one on the left. They were only women, because they separate the men completely. They put us in fifth and counting us and counting us. What they were counting us, we did not know. And we start walking, stop counting us. When it got lighter, I could see their barracks surrounded with electrifying fences, wires, electrocuted wires, whatever you say. And from one of the barracks, a girl came out. She wore a very short dress, no shoes, and no hair. So I thought maybe in this barrack there are women who are mentally ill, and didn't think of it that in 1 hour I will look exactly the same. They took us to a very big room. They told us to undress ourselves completely. Of course, we never were used to be undressed in front of men, SS men, and the men who were working in the camp, who were wearing this white and blue pajamas. We don't undress ourselves. So they start taking the beds and start beating us. So we undressed ourselves. We had to form a circle and walk one behind each other. From there, they start still picking up women who were thin, very thin, or had any spots on their bodies. I must tell you something, that in the ghetto when I was working with the children, one time I had 15 little boils around me and two big ones in the back, which I still got a mark there. When I went to Auschwitz, I didn't have no boils, no nothing. It's just like God was with me all the time that I have to survive. And I still don't know where I am, what they're going to do to me. After that, they took us to a place where they put numbers, tattooed us with the numbers, shaved us everywhere, which was the most terrible thing for I was a young girl, I was 15, to look like a monster without hair. We didn't recognize each other. They shaved us everywhere, under the arm, below, and on the head. And they start giving us dresses, just dresses, no shoes, no nothing. They put us again in fifths, and they're counting us. We couldn't understand that it was a chimney and the place was lit up when we got to Auschwitz, when it was dark. What is this chimney burning? Night and day, and flame is coming out, and the camp is absolutely lit up. Anyway, They put us in a barrack where we had banks. 5 gerus to a bank. They never gave us any blankets or anything. That was the end of summer, I would say. Still was warm, and we kept ourselves together. Of course, later, when you got up in the morning, you could see that one of the girls is dead. It was very, very tough. They didn't give us any work or anything. We just were lying there, doing nothing. They took us once a day to a toilet, so-called, which was a barrack and a big hole. You stood there, then dump a little bit, and after a minute or two, they start beating to get out. Why the girl was wearing such a short dress, I realized afterwards. When we went to the toilet, we used to tear the dresses to wipe ourselves, and that's why the dress was getting shorter and shorter. We are not allowed to leave the barracks on our own. They used to give us, they used to wake us up 4 o'clock in the morning, and 5 o'clock we had to stand outside in fifths, or fives, you say fives, counting us till the Germans used to come. We had to stay from 5 o'clock in the morning till 10 o'clock sometimes. Rain, snow, whatever weather it was, waiting for the Germans to come and count us. The girls were fainting. It was terrible. And when somebody fainted, you didn't see them anymore, of course. Or they put them, like I fainted already as well, and they put me in one of the blocks, was called like an ambulance, which was a little hospital. And it's a matter of fact, I was very lucky as well, because the roll commander did not come. Usually the roll commander used to come and take all the ill people out and put them in the gas chambers, which I found out later. When I was that time in the hospital, they were bombing. Bombs came. I don't know if they were English or American. And we are praying to God they should bomb us together with the Germans. But it didn't happen. We thought they were bombing the crematoriums. Also didn't happen. They were bombing somewhere further away. I don't know what. Not till today, I don't know what. But it was a fantastic experience to know that they came and they would bomb us. We wanted to be dead with the Germans. We wanted to see them dead. What they were doing to us. One day one girl says to me, you know what, Barbara, one of your cousins from Lubranets, a friend is there. There were 10 blocks. And the last 2 blocks, men used to come and work there. I don't know what they were doing there. And one of the men was this friend of my cousin's. She says, why don't you slip out, call his name out, maybe he can help you. And I did so. I sneaked out from the block, went to the end of the camp there. By the way, I was in a camp, they called it Zigeuner camp, which is number C camp. C, Slager C. And I was calling his name out. He was not there, but his brother was there. And, of course, he was very surprised to see me there. But he said, which block I am in? I said, number 30. And he says, Henek, his brother, will come the next day. He came the next day. He brought me a kaftan, a scarf on my, for my head, overall, socks, and clogs. It's like the Dutch clogs, shoes from wood. He introduced me to the block Eltester. A block Eltester was the capo who looked after us. After every block had 1,000 women. In the middle of the block, we had a chimney, which was about 3/4 of a yard high, and going along the whole block, where apparently, well, before we were there, they used to have horses there. And they used to put a fire there. But when we were there, they didn't put any fire. But the couple, when she wanted to see what we are doing, she used to walk on this chimney, and she could see us all. So he introduced me to this block eldest, to this couple. And he told her that I can sing. He brought me also a loaf of bread. So I shared with the other girls. As the block eldest knew I was singing, she used to wake me up sometimes in the night. They used to make parties, inviting some men, soldiers, I don't know, I didn't want to know. And she asked me to sing, and they were dancing. Then they went to another room, and all the food was lying there. Wherever I could put the food in my pockets, and wherever I put everywhere the sandwiches and the cakes, went back to my block and gave to the girls as well, which saved quite a lot.
A Mengele.
I only had a contact with Mengele when I was sent to work. I tell you in a minute afterwards, but for the moment I want to continue a little bit and I tell you how I got in touch with Mengele.